and welcome back to Miss McIntosh, my darling, the commentary. We're on chapter 79. Character list is Esther Longtree, Vera Cartwheel, Esther Longtree's parents, she just says mother, then a passive policeman for her father. Her father's uncle and some other, I think, relatives. And then there's the old woman, who's also called a concubine and also a dark woman. Synopsis: Esther talks about her unnatural conception. On her 7th birthday, she experienced something that makes every day seem like that birthday, which isn't a good thing. Paragraph 1. Esther's described as being elusive, weak, and gentle, yet firm, muscular, and a natural woman. For this reason, she snorted and pranced sometimes and was mad. She fought against anyone that tried to restrain her. She wanted to be beautiful and graceful as a white horse. Instead, she was mulish, even in her looks. She knew. What mate for such a woman? Only another of her loneliness could equal her. And there was no one. Esther was not conceived in the normal way. She herself had been conceived through doubt and was from the beginning like a terrible joke that was played on nature. She, this natural woman for whom there was no natural answer, her parents were not mated. 2. Esther was embarrassed that she knew how she was conceived. Her parents were separate and lonely. She was the only natural one, the only one who could really suffer, grow, evolve. She deserved pity because of how she was conceived. The conception of herself was barren, empty of heart, and her parents' lives had been empty without real issue or real child endowed with love. There had been no conjugal love, no marriage bed, no conception of the real child. She was described as a child in a nightmare. She cried and pulled at the rope that her mother tied her with and felt unwanted. She still bore the marks of the rope. 3. Esther realized now the cruelty, the reason for her father's kindness, that it was all because of there having been no consummation and no spark. It was all because of there having been no love, no flesh, no blood. She knew now because she had been taken by love. She believed her parents had never experienced love. She insisted her parents had never consummated their marriage, but had only dreamed of heaven as something far away. They did not understand even the mating of trees, birds, and butterflies. Even so, Esther and her father cried at her mother's funeral. It was not Esther's fault that her parents' marriage was not normal, even though her mother blamed her for this as well. So I don't know when her mother died. I don't know. That's weird. The future had not been an influence upon the past, she being not present then, so it was no fault of hers that her parents' marriage had been arid. Esther says her father kissed her mother on the forehead, and that's how she was conceived. Between the wedding and the funeral, no time would have passed, all being fixed and still except for the issue. Esther Longtree, who dwelled with these old honeymooners, and was a sardonic comment upon their lives. This created an awkward situation. How should a daughter of such a marriage live, beget children, and marry? How, she had often asked herself. She who loved nature so, all of nature. In classical mythology, Cupid is the god of desire, erotic love, attraction, and affection. He's often portrayed as the son of the love goddess Venus and the god of war Mars. Esther may be referring to the Immaculate Conception, which is the belief that the Virgin Mary was free of original sin from the moment of her conception. Original sin is the Christian doctrine that holds that humans, through the act of birth, inherit a tainted nature in need of regeneration and a proclivity to sinful conduct. According to Christian apocryphal and Islamic tradition, Saint Anne was the mother of Mary and the maternal grandmother of Jesus. Saint Anne appears as the mother of Mary in the late 2nd century Gospel of James. Saint Anne and her husband Joachim are infertile, but God hears their prayers and Mary is conceived. The conception is claimed to occur without sexual intercourse between Saint Anne and Joachim, which fits well with the Gospel of James's persistent emphasis on Mary's sacred purity, but the story does not advance the idea of an immaculate conception. The Orthodox Church claims that Mary was conceived by her parents in the same way everyone's conceived. Anne, Hannah in Arabic, is recognized as a highly spiritual woman and as the mother of Mary. In the Quran, she is described as childless until her old age. One day, Hannah saw a bird feeding its young while sitting in the shade of a tree, which awakened her desire to have children of her own. She prayed for a child and eventually conceived Joachim. Imran in Arabic died before the child was born. Expecting the child to be male, Hannah vowed to dedicate him to isolation and service in the Second Temple. However, Hannah bore a daughter instead and named her Mary. Her words upon delivering Mary reflect her status as a great mystic, Realizing that while she had wanted a son, this daughter was God's gift to her, she said, "My Lord, truly I bring her forth a female, and God is greater in knowledge of what she brought forth, and the male is not like the female." So her Lord received her, and with the very best acceptance. And her bringing forth caused the very best to develop in her. Joachim was a rich man. Joachim was a rich and pious man who regularly gave to the poor. At the temple, Joachim's sacrifice was rejected, so the couple's childlessness was interpreted as a sign of divine displeasure. Joachim consequently withdrew to the desert, where he fasted and did penance for 40 days. Angels then appeared to both Joachim and Anne to promise them a child. Joachim later returned to Jerusalem and embraced Anne at the city gate, located in the walls of Jerusalem. An ancient belief held that a child born of an elderly mother who had given up hope of having offspring was destined for great things. Joachim is named as the patron saint of fathers, grandfathers, grandparents, married couples, cabinet makers, and linen traders. 4. Esther questions if she was really her mother's child. The road was so long, and there was no road but that which she had imagined. Everything happening to her. Esther wanted to be the mother and had not succeeded because of her own mother and the littleness of all the men. She was too big like her father, facing the impossibility of this creation the way nothing fitted her. It was all wrong from the beginning. The times were out of joint and she the dead. She should have been herself the premature. Since the conception was unnatural, she should not have been born. Then nothing would have been born or suffered. It was because of the difference between her father and her mother that only the unnatural conception could have transpired. 5. Esther didn't learn about how she was conceived until much later. 6. Most children, when they are young, believe that they were grown out of the earth, fallen from the sky, was once somebody else. Esther's father's brother told her how she was conceived, and that's why her name was Little Jackass. He told her she had come out of a little silver spoon, and that the conception was painful and different from anything else in nature. Nothing had ever been clear to her. She had felt like falling into pieces. And this is something just from my own childhood, that my cousin insisted that I think the stork dropped him off, and he had dropped him off in front of the house. His parents had come out and picked him up, and that's how he was conceived. Whereas my brother and I were more worldly and said, "No, it's because of your mother and father sleeping together." Anyway, there was a big commotion about us discussing that with my cousin when we were like, I don't know, 7 or something. Paragraph 7. Esther knows that some people are born with silver spoons in their mouths, but that was not her history, hers being different from any of the others. A spoon having been used as the instrument to impregnate her mother. And so this is really, I got stuff on this, but yeah. The spoon is described as tiny. The process of passing this tiny spoon between her mother and father took years. There was a third person, a woman who had passed between her parents, walking back and forth, carrying the spoon as if it were a knife, the life of immense Esther Longtree, one among the many possibilities when all the future was dark. The idiom to be born with a silver spoon in their mouth, someone means someone born into a wealthy family or someone who has a prosperous background or is of a well-to-do family environment. Often the connotation that the person does not fully realize or appreciate the value of his or her advantage. It's having been inherited rather than earned. It first appeared in print in English as early as 1719 in the translation of the novel Don Quixote. In vitro fertilization was not successful in humans until 1977. So it predates what Marguerite Young's writing here, but yet it's exactly what it sounds like. Prior to the development of IVF in humans, a physician and professor was doing research on reproduction in animals in 1891. In 1934, IVF was tried on rabbits. In 1948, research was expanded on IVF. In 1958, mouse embryos were grown in vitro and transferred into female mice. In 1959, research proved fertilization in vitro was capable of producing a live birth of a rabbit. So I don't know what she describes, and even later on, she still describes it as this kind of in vitro fertilization, which didn't actually come about for humans and be successful until 77, but as late as 59, they knew it was possible for animals. 8. Esther says the conception took place under gaslighting that cast great shadows of the father of the woman. Oh, of the other of the fa of the father of the other woman, none of the mother. She describes a transaction taking place across a great arid distance, cold as Arctic snows, the kitchen floor. It took 7 years of trial and error before it was achieved, before the womb of her mother was discovered and filled with the future life, visible, invisible. I'm just checking something. It was her mother's aspirations which had caused this, her mother's desire. Esther says her mother didn't take into account that the child would grow up and need care. Esther's mother thought of children more like dolls because she was ignorant of life, of growth. It was an arid conception that made the impossible creation of her mother's shallow dreams, which had not foreseen the reality of stinking flesh. Esther's mother is described as being modest, frugal, and neat. She did not like Esther's father because she was so small and he was so big. Esther's father is described as careless, losing everything and missing nothing. Her parents' union was a mistake, a thought rather than a fact, a dream rather than real. Esther thought she was like her father's people. Her uncle, father's brother, told her it was unnatural and that she had almost wrecked the marriage. Gaslighting is the production of artificial light from combustion of a gaseous fuel. Early gaslights were ignited manually by lamplighters. Chinese records show gaslighting in use as far back as 1700 years ago, although many later designs are self-igniting. Widespread use of gaslighting in the U.S. began in factories in the early 1800s. 9. Esther says the uncle was a pugilist that believed in spiritualist mediums and left everything to one when he died of cancer. Spiritualism is a metaphysical school of thought opposing physicalism and also is the category of all spiritual beliefs from ancient to modern. They believe that spirit mediums are gifted to carry on such communication, but that anyone may become a medium through study and practice. They believe that spirits are capable of growth and perfection, progressing through higher spheres or planes, and that the afterlife is not a static state, but one in which spirits evolve. The two beliefs that contact with spirits is possible and that spirits may dwell on a higher plane lead to a third belief that spirits can provide knowledge about moral and ethical issues as well as about God in the afterlife. Many believers speak of spirit guides or specific spirits often contacted and relied upon for worldly and spiritual guidance. According to spiritualists, anyone may receive spirit messages, but formal communication sessions are held by mediums who claim thereby to receive information about the afterlife. Spiritualism developed and reached its peak growth in membership from the 1840s to the 1920s, especially in English-speaking countries. By 1897, spiritualism was said to have more than 8 million followers in the United States and Europe, mostly drawn from the middle and upper classes. 10. Esther smiled at the thought of her uncle, and she always smiled over the deaths of adults, if not those of little children or the little children they had been. She claims her child and her childhood are dead. This uncle had treated her badly by teasing her, and it made her mad. He also describes her as a mule. He claims she had to learn to defend herself with golden gloves. He also said her father's side of the family was crazy. Even her father teased her and also called her little jackass. They pinched her black and blue. Esther thought of a little jackass shadow to try and make sense of what had happened. They both were born outside of blissful love. 11. The uncle described the spoon used to conceive Esther as silver and with a tiny cup and long handle. Silver is the greatest conductor of heat and cold. Her mother was a virgin and more like a child, who was wooed because of the love of love and not because of the necessity. This was how Esther figured out her conception. They had created her out of nothing but their breathing, out of the void starlight like one of hers. She should have been left there unborn, but because of her mother's ambition, there had been this great effort and this old concubine walking between her parents in the dark hours. This old concubine is described as large-fisted and ugly. Esther's father is described as marrying a woman too small for him. He was immense and lonely while her mother was as small as a bird. Esther blames her mother because she was too small. Her father could reach no woman. He would always have reached beyond the woman, always have reached the cold starlight, the loneliness, always have punctured the starlight and not the woman. The woman was too small a target. Esther thinks he might have still missed even if the woman was as big as a star. He must have been very frustrated, but he never said anything about the strange domestic triangle. He had never admitted to anybody that there was this great woman like a shadow coming between him and his wife, this great woman walking back and forth between the woman and the man. Never that there had been another woman making love to his wife in a long honeymoon, a honeymoon that never ended, never that his marriage was consummated by someone else in his place. Esther thought he didn't seem sad about it. She describes her mother being impregnated by the ghostly spoon through the clouds by the large knotted hand. Her mother would wanted life without wanting it. Her mother remembered the face of the woman leaning above her, if she remembered nothing else, remembered in the triangle formed by her lifted limbs, the face of that woman who was immense, dark, misshapen, and savage. She thought the woman resembled Esther. The woman had smelled like manure, didn't smile or frown, and was awkward. The history of miraculous births in mythology and religions have many different ways in which a god, goddess, and human can be impregnated, but none can be found involving objects such as a spoon. 12. Esther says because of her unusual conception as the product of barren parents, she was born mulish. She hated fences and obstacles, but she was driven to the fence between this eternity and this life, a creature driven to an extreme. She stood in eternity and leaned her head toward life that was on the other side of the fence. Esther thinks that if her father had touched her mother, he would have killed her. It was a mystery that Esther was alive or sane. She was formed by contradictions. Dumb, brilliant one, gaping, swollen, her body striated because of the many births which were the stillbirths, and laboring always to give birth through love, through necessity, through answering flesh. For hers was the maternal heart, even though Cupid had seemingly missed her. It didn't surprise her that her parents chose another way to conceive. 13, her parents had hired the old concubine, who was large, dark, had a dimpled chin, and carried the little spoon with the elixir of life burning between them. Esther thought this was a cruel way to be impregnated. She had the old concubine's dimpled chin. She was a woman dressed in men's clothing. She smelled. Her father was there by the kitchen stove, sweating. Her mother cried and heaved. 14. Esther says nothing had changed since then. The only difference was there were no stillborn, and no one could have foreseen the immensity of the future or what she would be like, her everlasting pregnancy and loneliness. She thought it strange how much life changed after Esther was born. She worried about how she was conceived because all her life upon this planet she had been teased, had been known as Little Jackass ever since she could remember. Her father had used the nickname but was also good and kind and had forgiven her everything imaginable, even her birth, and had said she looked like his mother. With him alone she could have been so happy, even though she might be pregnant only with her tears. It was her mother that made her unhappy by reminding her that she was mulish and did many things wrong. Esther says her mother's heart was hidden behind a little door. Esther's heart was bigger than her parents, so she had been successful, playing her joke on them, these parents who would never know her as she really was, but only as they thought she was, and there was such a great difference that she herself was astonished by the difference. If only they'd known all she'd known. If they had known of ejaculations falling and Esther's shadow and act of life with all these others, if they had known that her conception had not really shadowed her or made her fail upon the verge of birth, if they had known that she was not a virgin eating green cherries. After all, her own was the virgin birth, admittedly, but she was Jesus Christ or anybody holy, and she was both popular and vulgar, running around with all the boys ever since she could remember and dropping stillborn. Green cherries may refer to maraschino cherries, which is a preserved sweetened cherry, typically made from light-colored sweet cherries such as Royal Anne, Rainier, or Gold varieties. In their modern form, the cherries are first preserved in a brine solution to bleach the fruit, then soaked in food coloring, sugar syrup, and other components. 15. Esther read Mary was impregnated by a dove, and that was why Christ was born fatherless. She also read Christ had a big family. None of that had happened to Esther. Really, it was all quite ordinary thing, nothing to talk of as a great secret, the manner of her conception, her birth, her afterbirth, what had happened before anything happened. The dove is a Christian symbol, occurs frequently. According to Matthew 3:16, during the baptism of Jesus, the Holy Spirit descended like a dove and came to rest on Jesus. For this reason, the dove became a symbol of the Holy Spirit, and in general occurs frequently in connection with early representations of baptism. It signifies also the Christian soul, not the human soul as such, but as indwelt by the Holy Spirit. However, the more ancient explanation of the dove as a Christian symbol refers to it as a symbol of Christ. Irenaeus in the 2nd century explains that the number 801 is both a numerological value of the sum in Greek of the letters of the word dove and the sum of the values of the letters alpha and omega, which refers to Christ. In the Bible story of Noah and the flood, after the flood, a dove returns to Noah bringing an olive branch as a sign that water had receded. This scene was interpreted by the church fathers that Christ brings salvation through the cross. This biblical scene led to interpreting the dove also as a symbol of peace. An impregnation across distance was never known to be impossible from the time of the dove. Esther claims she is the offspring of her parents' separateness, which was not her fault. The ugly, dark woman had carried the spoon between them, her parents, and had warmed her mother with her hands when the life had seemed ready to flicker and go out. The dark old woman had made love to her mother. The woman had treated her mother badly, but the woman had been paid for this. She walked back and forth between her father and mother, dressed as a man. She had cast her shadow like a man's shadow on the wall. Her mother had watched the shadow. 16. Esther says she was born in the year of the April blizzard. There are three worst blizzards on record in the U.S. in April, 1873, the Great Storm on Easter Sunday, 1893, and 1933. Her mother blamed her since many animals and plants died during the storm. Esther says again that she had an unhappy childhood because of her sin of killing her twin in the shadow of Little Jackass. Esther feels she was scorned by her mother and by the world, tormented, kicked around, bruised, and had believed the worst even when her father said that she reminded him of good things and even his mother. Esther's grandfather was not mentioned and was unimportant. Esther pictures her grandmother as a merry-go-round, giving birth to many children easily. Esther was not like her, though, since she was like a mule turning through a gray fog. A treckling mill may refer to treckle mining, which is a joke about mining of black treckle or molasses in a raw form similar to coal. The subject purports to be serious, but it is an attempt to test credulity. Thick black treckle makes the deception plausible. The topic has been a joke in British humor since the mid-19th century. 17. Esther's mother was sometimes furious with the third person that had impregnated her. 18. The dark woman had come to their house offering her services, the bringing of life, which is the bringing of death. The woman is described as dark, ugly, fierce, and not kind. Her hands were stained as if she dug in the earth, and her skin was spotted like a frog's back. She was a foreigner with an accent. She is described as steadfast and strong because of her ability to carry the spoon back and forth without dropping one spark of life. Esther thinks the dark woman is cruel as a child, but now more wonderful, more beautiful than either of her parents. She was beautiful, beautiful inside with something never to be visible, never to be seen, never to be expressed. Esther describes a dark woman as making love to Esther's mother, trying to make the life come, and it would not seem to come. No direct reference was found for a dark woman who assists during births. She seems to be a mixture of a woman depicted in folklore as a hag, crone, and lofty lady with aspects of a midwife. References for all of these are listed at the end of the chapter. 19. Esther claims the dark woman came every night for 7 years because of the agreement to impregnate and deliver Esther's mother's baby. The dark woman would not be paid until after the baby was born successfully. Esther's father thought they were paying money, but her mother knew better, for there had been a secret agreement between the two women. Once the dark woman confirmed the child was born, then she would never return, would never darken her mother's door again. But her mother must someday darken this old woman's door. 20. Esther's mother cried because of the great effort she made for no purpose. Her father just sat behind the stove. At best, what was the man's role in life? The dark woman is queer and lonely. She was similar to Esther, only cold and barren. This was the long act of the barren conception, a conception which should never have taken place, since it required so much assistance from a stranger. The conception should have passed in an unconscious moment. This was the cruel consciousness and the slow act. The impregnation took 7 years and was less beautiful than if the father's ejaculation had fallen upon the rose. Esther's mother had never given up hope. She thought the child would look exactly like her. The description follows of what may refer to artificial insemination. Artificial insemination is the deliberate introduction of a sperm into a female's cervix or uterine cavity for the purpose of achieving a pregnancy through in vivo fertilization by means other than sexual intercourse or in vitro fertilization. It is a fertility treatment for humans and is common practice in animal breeding. The first recorded case of artificial insemination was John Hunter in 1790, who helped impregnate a linen draper's wife. The first reported case of artificial insemination by a donor occurred in 1884 when William H. Pancoast, professor in Philadelphia, took sperm from a handsome student in his class to inseminate an anesthetized woman without her knowledge. The incident was not published until 25 years later in a medical journal. The sperm bank was developed in Iowa starting in the 1950s, and research conducted by University of Iowa, where Young went, Medical School researchers Jerome Sherman and Raymond Bunge. In the United Kingdom, the British obstetrician Mary Barton founded one of the first fertility clinics to offer donors insemination in the 1930s. Mary Barton and her first husband were medical missionaries in pre-partition India, then still ruled by Britain. She witnessed the way in which women would be punished or even killed for being childless. At the time, it was taboo to suggest that it might be the husband and not the wife who was infertile, not only on the Indian subcontinent, but also in the United Kingdom. Barton understood that both men and women could be infertile, and in 1943 was the lead author on an article in 1943 for the British Medical Journal. I'm going to take that out. That's repetitive. It was signed by many of the researchers active in the field in Great Britain at the time. With her second husband, Berthold Weissner, Mary Barton successfully inseminated an estimated 1,500 women, the majority with sperm provided from Weissner. Some 100 to 200 from neuroscientist Derek Richter, as well as an unknown number from as yet unidentified donors. It is estimated that Weissner is the biological father of around 600 children born following these procedures, although some believe this figure could be as high as 1,000. When Barton and Weissner published their paper on the procedure, it was publicly condemned by the Pope, who called it a sin, and the Archbishop of Canterbury, who called for the British Parliament to make human artificial insemination illegal. Although it was not criminalized, it was not legalized either, and therefore the status of artificial insemination was ambiguous. Consequently, the activities of Barton and Weissner at the fertility clinic were conducted in secrecy, and all inseminated women were instructed to tell nobody about it. Meanwhile, Esther's father sat behind the stove, reading. Sometimes he would catch himself sleeping. All seemed like a dream to him, but not to Esther's mother, for she must bear the dream. Esther describes her creation as a mistake, from Esther being born into a world where she would never be wanted because too immense, would be stepped on, beaten, told to go back. It had been too small a womb to hold her. She had come forth because she must, not because of her decision, scrupulous and disenchanted, but because she must, mad, her forehead bleeding from the wounds of smaller hands than hers. This story seems to explain that Esther was a product of artificial insemination, only not by her father. This would account for why Esther's mother thought why Esther should look just like her, or that Rosemary would have if Esther hadn't killed her in the womb. 21, Esther's mother could never have guessed what future was really waiting, the unrealizable, the future already realized, the generations of the dream, Esther Longtree. Could her mother have realized the answer in the silence? Would she not have stopped the clock and left time an unwritten page in Esther stillborn? Esther wondered if she had ever been conceived or born. She sometimes wondered, or must she be born again? She waited still for life, waited among the stars where Rosemary waited. Esther's mother had followed whatever the dark woman told her to do, wrapped in the dream of self, crying, her eyes glassy with fear and expectation and love, love of nobody, love of anger, love of that which stood upon the shore of the inaccessible creation where the other woman stood waiting. Her father read the sports scores. Creation was always of the many, never of the one, always of the fragments coming together to make a child. Her father would feel self-congratulatory once the baby was born. Esther's mother felt her only love was doomed to die before its birth. The conception came after the other woman, calm but fierce as a man who takes a woman, would force her to breathe and respond. Rosemary came out easily, but Esther required instruments. Esther had been afraid to be born. She had been born kicking. 22. Even after it was confirmed Esther's mother was pregnant, she was afraid and repentant. She regretted the decision to become pregnant and wanted to stop it. She remembered her promise that if ever she needed help, there would be given help, that she must come and show herself to the other woman. 23. One night while Esther's father was at work, Esther's mother walked through the fields and woods to the other woman so that she might take the child away, put it out of doors, burn it, hide it, leave her free. Had she not the privilege of changing her mind now that she was pregnant? Esther's mother finally reached the other woman and knocked on the door. The other woman had seemed to be waiting for her, had known that she would come. Esther's mother undressed and lay down. The other woman had covered her mother's face with kisses cold and dark, had rocked her mother in her arms, had laid her hand across her mother's mouth to still her quiet screaming. The other woman's breath grew heavier, and she was powerless to resist the great clumsy hands, the great clumsy feet, which held her pinioned. Esther's mother saw that which she most had feared, that it was a man who had taken her away from her husband, that it was not, as she had thought, a woman who had helped her, that she had lost her virtue, she had committed adultery. For this other woman was a man against whom her struggles were all useless, she having no strength. Something inside of her had died when she saw, when she felt the man's presence. She would never be, she knew, the same again. The man would not get rid of it, would not hide it, would be of no help. Esther's mother slept, dreaming it was all a dream, and then when she awakened, the other woman offered her a cup of coffee. Esther's mother left and walked home across the fields, through the woods, and down the highway, all in the broad daylight, and people had spoken to her as usual. Okay. And she had not answered, her mind being elsewhere. No one had seen her when she had tried to get rid of the child within, as the other woman would not do for her. She had not been able to get rid of it, and there had been two, not one, and as time had passed, she had forgotten the horror of that night, and she had remembered only the beauty. The other woman she had remembered as beautiful and ravaged. So this kind of... So this scene... So this scene mirrors the night Vera discovered Miss McIntosh was bald. In that whole, there's a lot of similarities there. 24, then Rosemary was stillborn, and Esther lived and looked like the other woman. Esther claims to have remembered what happened during the conception. Esther was burdened by her mother's guilty conscience and had been neglected to and forgotten. Her mother constantly reminded her ever since she could remember that one was missing, that she had killed it. Esther's mother would laugh Esther's mother would laugh, then became... enraged at the accusation. When it was her birthday, her mother either baked two cakes or none, saying that Esther ate enough to keep two alive. Esther would rather starve in those olden days than eat a bite. I don't think I have the sentence right. Oh. Esther's mother would laugh when Esther became enraged at the accusation. Okay, that makes more sense. 25. Esther would bury food for Rosemary and then dig it up to see if she had eaten it. This is how Esther's innocency was lost, when she was too ignorant to know the difference between man and woman, or man and child, or child and child. She had searched for Rosemary. Esther says there is one more dead child that might testify against her and call her heartless mother, even though her heart was great, too great. Esther was the child of a heartless mother. On one of Esther's birthdays, her mother promised her something beautiful and took her to see the other woman. 26. This happened on her 7th birthday, and from that moment on, she never trusted anyone. That birthday, the child had been ready to love her mother, ready for the first time to ask forgiveness, to lay her big head against her mother's tiny heart, to touch the body which had not touched hers. She had been happy naturally as a child must be. All the world seemed to be born upon her birthday, and everything was so beautiful. Her mother promised her this great surprise, a seeing of all things clearly, the understanding of the mystery of life and it all if she would be good. Esther washed her face and combed her hair to get ready. Her mother woke her up, and Esther wanted to cry out, seeing how beautiful her mother was, how like a dream, that she was different from what she had ever been before, vague and sweet, dressed for her birthday, for the celebration which had been promised, that her eyes were lighted with love. Esther's mother had taken off her wedding ring and was dressed like a bride. She must look her best in order not to disappoint an old, old friend. It was because of the anniversary that she had thought to resurrect the beauty. Esther's mother was going to explain everything to Esther, how life was like a wedding ring, without beginning, without end, and how Esther had been wanted and had been born. Esther was bored because she thought when things were born must die, for she did not know that man and woman meet, that the man had any part in it, or was ever more than a stranger. Since her parents had hidden all these things from her, it was all like a dream or like a nightmare to Esther Longtree. 27. Esther and her mother left early in the morning. Esther's mother told her not to tell her father because Esther's birthday might make him sad. Her mother had warned her that it might bring back unhappy memories. They were going to visit someone close to her mother who had done her a great service, who had brought her to the brink of life when she had stood at the brink of death, someone immeasurably generous and kind whom now the mother understood better than before. She wanted this friend to see Esther and that everything had turned out for the best. Esther needed to be on her best behavior because her mother owed so much to this friend, her life itself, and had taken after her, inheriting her features, and would inherit the property and also Esther's. Children and grandchildren in eternity, for this friend had no other heirs, and was cut off from life and had helped in the conception of Esther. This last part seems to mirror the idea of a promised land, such as where God promised land to Abraham and his descendants in the Bible. 28. Esther and her mother seemed to walk all day trying to find the farm. Esther imagined it to be a magical and beautiful place. Esther did not complain about the long walk, but her mother did, since she was not dressed for it. They walked until it was dark. 29. Esther's mother acted strangely, and Esther thought she was not so much a parent as a stranger, and perhaps every parent was a stranger, had made the child feel older than the parent, as if she should carry her. 30. Esther's mother would stop and say she couldn't go on and doubted whether they should finish the journey. Then she would go on for Esther's sake. Her mother had only thought of Esther, Esther's welfare, development, future, even to the extent of sacrificing her husband. Esther walked on dreaming of what the place would look like and whether all her dreams then were not about to come true. She had seen nothing so beautiful as that which she dreamed of, and her gratitude was so great that she loved her mother as never before and decided that she would never marry, never leave home, never abandon her parents. This day on this trip, she was purer of heart than Rosemary. Looking back on this incident, Esther thought it was pitiful how soon her love was to be destroyed and the anguish fill the whole vexed body of a growing child, one who, looking forward to the future, had not sensed the past, and who had forgiven her mother and life itself for everything that was wrong with life with Esther. In the evening, just as they were going to give up the search, they came to the old mule farm and house like a negro shanty. Esther couldn't believe her mother's awful idea to visit the cruelty, the ugliness. The other woman was there, but near deaf and blind. Esther still recognized the other woman's features as her own. The other woman asked if the child lived, for it should inherit all her property, all that had ever been hers. The other woman focused her attention on Esther. Esther never forgot that even though she resembled her father, she looked more like the other woman. 31. Esther resented her parents after this, as any child would. That day all of nature had seemed to die or to be in mourning for another's death. There was no birthday celebration. They made their way home in the dark, and Esther's father was not there when they arrived. 32. Live, O happy dead. That one also kind of mirrors, like, Vera has that really beautiful night in the garden before she finds out Miss McIntosh is bald. And Esther here, that kind of mirrors as well, where she is her seventh birthday and everything's so happy and her mother's beautiful and all this is really wonderful, and then crash, burn. Last paragraph, 33. Since this incident, Esther was gradually dying by trying to return to the womb through birth. Even though she was given advantages, she couldn't use them now, and while growing up, she had been the neglected child. So every day was thus her birthday. This mirrors Vera's birthday at 14 earlier in the book. Interesting and bizarre. All right. Thank you for listening. Bye.